Welcome back, everyone. This week, we're continuing in our mentor couple series leading up to our book launch for The Rhythm of Home on June 4th. Woohoo! So excited for that. So if you haven't yet, make sure you grab your pre-order copy so you'll be able to snag your bonuses when they become available, and you can find that at therhythmofhome.com. So today, we're excited to share this conversation with legendary artist and producer Charlie Peacock and his lovely wife, Andy. She was great, babe.
She was wonderful.
Really love this conversation. Charlie has written songs and produced for everyone you can think of, from Amy Grant to DC Talk, for those old school Christian folks out there who know, and so many more. Charlie discovered and produced the first few records for Switchfoot and the Civil Wars, which is so cool. Yeah. And they ended up selling millions of copies all over the world. Now, he and his wife, Andy, also founded The Art House right here in Nashville, where they lived with their family, made records, and ran a ministry for over 25 years. They're also authors of a really neat new book called Why Everything That Doesn't Matter Matters So Much.
Yeah, they are so wonderful. But even more than all of those incredible accomplishments, Charlie and Andy are just two of the most kind, grounded, humble people that you could ever hope to meet. Yeah. In fact, as we listen to the stories of those in our community who have lived here for a while now, time and time again, Charlie and Andy's name will surface as mentors who have made a huge difference in somebody's life. We are so thankful for the love and care that they have poured out onto others, both locally and globally, with the work of their lives. Grab a good cup of coffee and maybe a pen and paper and lean in with us as we soak up all the wisdom from this incredible couple. Listen in.
Welcome to the show. We're so excited you're here with us today.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're so honored. I'm glad you could make it.
Yeah, my wife has been devouring this new project and book that you've got out here. So we can't wait to dive in and talk about all things this brand new book. But before we do, can you kind of help everybody understand a little bit of your story? Like, you know, where you're from, how'd you meet, and what was God doing when he brought you to Nashville?
I'll kick it off. We are from a little town in Northern California called Yuba City, California. We were both born and raised in the area, and we met in high school. Right before our freshman year, we were practicing in a marching band. And that's where we met, and we became friends, and we had just a lot in common, things that we loved, but we also just really loved talking to each other. And so we kind of started a conversation when we were 15 and 16 that has continued to this day. But we got married when we were 18 and 19. So 1975.
Wow. Yeah, next year's the big 50.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Amazing. Congratulations.
Yeah. So, you know, getting from Yuba City to Nashville is its own story and something that we had no idea of when we were young that that would become our story or really what would unfold for us after coming here.
Yeah. I mean, the irony of it is that we had been on this trip with some friends of ours and our families, and we were doing some music festivals, but just traveling around the United States for 6 weeks. And we came with a van full of children.
Yeah, van all full of our children.
Yeah. Pulling a trailer and all our music stuff and everything. And we came through Nashville and we were just so unimpressed. We were like, who would live here? Right. And then literally a year later, we were moving there. I mean, that's how crazy it was. It started in two ways. I mean, one, the work that we were involved in Sacramento was coming to an end. I was a part of a very unusual experiment in the 1980s of where a church funded musical artists to go out into mainstream pop music and just help them have, you know, careers in mainstream pop. And I was one of those, primarily because when I came to Christ, that's what I was doing. And so I was kind of someone who already represented what this group group of people wanted to do. And they had had a radio show called Rock and Religion that interviewed a lot of, you know, the popular musicians of the day. That could be Bob Dylan or Grateful Dead or Eric Clapton, and talking to them all about what their spiritual practices were or were not, right? Mm. But that work was coming to an end. And at the same time, Amy Grant's management and Sparrow Records in Southern California had found out about me and the music that I was doing. And they were both interested in having me move to Nashville and having me work with them. And so that opportunity came up and I came out here for a visit, told Andy, I think we should move here. She said, I'll be the judge of that. And and she came out and visited, and we really just had a unified spirit about it. We didn't have the vision yet. We didn't know what was really happening, but we were just taking baby steps. And as Andy often says, we're just following the breadcrumbs and getting as much information as we needed one day at a time. And that's how we made it to Nashville. And that was 34 years ago.
Wow. 34 years. So you've seen it change a lot.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. Uh-huh. We have really seen Nashville change.
Yeah. So one of the things you talk about in the book, and just something that you guys are really known for during your time here in Nashville, is starting the Art House. So tell our listeners what the Art House is and was, and how, kind of how that dream began for you guys and how you got it started.
Sure. It was an idea that I had that I started working on when I was touring over in Europe and writing about it a lot. I had when I wasn't on stage, I had a lot of time, open time to be reading and studying and praying. And I just felt after we moved to Nashville, I was pretty naive about Christian music. I didn't know that people were like came to Nashville to sort of make it in Christian music. I had been in church for about 6 years at the point that we moved to Nashville. So I'd had a little bit of interaction with the kind of the contemporary evangelical non-denominational church world, but not a lot. Because as I said, you know, I was out playing clubs and theaters and doing my music in a space that wouldn't have necessarily been considered Christian music, though I was obviously a young Christian. And my idea was like, you know, we need a place where we can talk about all the different ways that we can be faithful to God musically, and that if people really do believe that this thing, this genre of music called Christian music, is the highest and best use of music, then I think they're really missing the point about the freedom that we know in Christ and the grace that we have in Christ to be God's musical people everywhere and in everything, and especially making music for the church. But certainly not exclusively, that, you know, some of us would be trained up to conduct the Boston Symphony. Someone else would play jazz at the Village Vanguard. Someone else would be, you know, a pop star on top 40 radio, and so on and so forth, you know, and that there were just a zillion ways to do it. And it was multi-generational, and it was involved every country in the world and every people group in the world. And I just thought, wow, if we really do think this thing, this gospel music, Christian music thing in Nashville is the end all be all and everyone's copying it around the world, that really misses the point. I wanted to have a space and open up a space where we could talk about that. And that eventually developed a lot more into what Andy will share, which is more the vocational piece. So it kind of went from being music centric or art centric to the idea of what would it mean to live an artful, faithful life. And then that sort of became a come one, come all to everyone, not just artists.
So it did begin in Chuck's mind kind of as a vision and just something that he would try to articulate to me and I could grasp it a little bit. What I cared about was the connecting the dots of the scripture to all of life. I cared about that for myself, and I cared about providing a place that would provide teaching and discussion and really inspiring events for people to really begin to do that in whatever their sphere of life. And then the care for human life part of it was also a part that really got my imagination going. And so we bought an old country church, which was then about 100 years old. So we stepped into something that we didn't really know what all was ahead of us, but we just took one of those leaps. So for a while, for the first few years, we hosted all kinds of gatherings that were just for everybody or art-centric or for vocations of all sorts, and for college students at Belmont, and all ages of people came, and we had crowds of people. My kids and I baked cookies every week, and because part of the deal was, for me and my vision, was that this place would be a comfort, and it would be a place where people could really feel and taste a welcome, and that we would continue to create that in that place as long as we were there. And eventually we moved our family in, and that was, we have two children, and they were middle school and I think just beginning high school. So we moved them into this crazy place that by that time had a recording studio as well as, this big church that we would create and make into our home and the place where we would host. And then that grew into just over the years of our lives there, which ended up being we lived there for 24 years. And I think we started it a little bit before then, something like that. Started in 1991, moved our family in 1993. And so in those years, then the whole world of hospitality opened into something that was very personal, very house guests and meals and artists who were recording in the studio in for dinner, a lot of one-on-one mentoring and lots of conversations, lots of relationships, some for just a little bit, some for a long season, some that we're still in. And then we were learning who we were and what all the parts of our life were.
It was our own education. Yeah. We weren't just doling out wisdom from the mountaintop.
No. And we were, living family life and marriage inside of all that.
So how did you, you guys did that for 24 years. Mm-hmm. So obviously, hospitality and caring for others is a huge value for both of you. I'm sure it fleshes out in different ways for each of you according to your giftings. Mm-hmm. But I'm just curious, how were you able to set boundaries around your own marriage and personal family while pouring out your life to serve others during those years?
You think far too highly of us. What is this thing called boundary? Yeah, well, I'll let Andy handle that since I was probably more the instigator who had to learn, what boundaries were, or I was instigating all of the chaos, I guess, and then incrementally learning about boundary while Andy had a lot of wisdom about boundary that I wasn't listening to, mostly because I had various drivers, that were part of my brokenness. So I feel like I had a lot more to learn in the process, maybe than Andy did.
I think we were both learning all the way through. When we first moved our family in, there was so much going on already. At least once a week, we had a gathering that had at least, it was over 100 people every single week. And then we had the studio and we had artists coming and going all hours of the night. And just moving in and immediately facing all that, that in itself was really something that I had to get used to. It was beautiful when it was happening, but it was a lot of hard work, and it was even just the stuff that you would imagine your kid comes home from, you know, sports practice and they can't get from the kitchen into their room to take a shower and just all the stuff, like you're working it out. You hadn't thought of any of that ahead of time, what that would be like. Mm-hmm. And then just as the years went on, I felt really increasingly called to what we were doing, but the fact that we did not have a start time or a finish time or even weekends when, you know, there was nobody there, we didn't build into our life periods of time each year where there would just be nobody and we would just have privacy and private home, private marriage. That's the thing that we continued to try to figure out really the whole time we were there. And I think we were still trying to figure it out when it was time to leave. So we never got to a place of perfection or a place that, you know, felt like, okay, we finally got it. You know, it was more like in the book, I write in hindsight, if I were beginning again, I would build boundaries in. I would build Sabbath. I would really stick to that. Have one day in seven that just was completely other, restful, playful, you know, that you would have that to look forward to. I would do that for both when we still had kids at home. I would do it just for the preservation of our own bodies and minds and hearts and our marriage. And so those were things we were learning and we could, I think, talk about much better in hindsight than we practiced during the time that we were involved.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And as a parent of five kids, I can't imagine, you know, a wild adventure. I love adventures. We're all for adventures, but that is, the one of the wildest, coolest adventures I've ever heard of. So I'm really, really neat you guys did that. So speaking of adventures, let's dive into this brand new adventure that you guys are on. Mm-hmm. A brand new project out, and it's titled Why Everything That Doesn't Matter Matters So Much: The Way of Love in a World of Hurt. Could you take a few seconds for us and kind of explain where this idea came from and what this looks like for you and your life together?
Sure. Yeah, I had written a post on my Substack and used that phrase, and our editor had read the post. And when it came time for us to think about a title for the book, she was like, well, maybe you've already titled it. Maybe it's this. And so we played around with that for a bit. We had several different title options at one point. And, you know, the more often we came back to it, the more we've started feeling like, you know what, I think this is it, because it is a playful way, in a provocative way, of saying everything matters. And that's really what we wanted to invite people into, is to not say just that everything matters, but everyone matters. We live in a culture that is so metric heavy. Yeah. And so celebrity heavy, and everything these days is, you know, I mean, even as fellow authors, I mean, you know that nobody's that interested in what you're writing about first. They're more interested in how many Instagram followers you have. That's what begins a conversation with a book publisher. That's the world that we live in. And so we wanted to write something that didn't rail against that as much as provide an alternative way of viewing life, and particularly as Christians, because we think that what we're called to is very counterculture to that. And we wanted to articulate it and put it in a book form through these letters to people as a gift, as an alternative to this obsession with titles, obsession with our Instagram accounts and celebrity. And again, just like, well, what are you doing to monetize this? You know, like just the questions, it's like, you know, everything's about metrics. And yeah, we're just like, no, we live in that world. Yeah. And we're all called to figure out how to navigate it. But our calling is to a different kind of economy. You know, we wanted to explain what that economy would look like through these letters without you know, making it too theologically intensive and making it more narrative oriented.
Well, it is beautifully done. And as an avid reader myself, I just want to say thank you for this wonderful work. As a person who consumes a lot of books, I think it's easy for a reader to be able to tell what the motive is of an author when you read. And it's very clear that you guys are actively trying to add value to people's lives and offer something that's truly helpful. So I just really appreciate that as a reader.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I hope people will pick up the book. I love that each chapter, like you said, is a letter written to the reader. And it feels like a gift in that way. You know, each chapter you open up and it feels personal somehow because you guys are addressing real issues, but that feel very personal to each person reading. So we can't dive into every single chapter, but I picked a handful that I thought we could maybe highlight. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I would love to start with, there's a chapter called Becoming a Light in Your City. And you talk about becoming a city maker. Tell us more about this idea. I just loved that mindset and way of living. So could you unpack that idea for us a little bit?
Yeah, I think politics has shaped us in a non-biblical way in that we see ourselves outside of the action. And that there's these people, these elected officials, and that we put some energy into getting the people elected that we want to get elected. And somehow they're going to get everything done. And I don't have anything against that as a democratic system. But what I think we're called to as Christians is to be city makers and city curators. And that political piece as to who is elected is a pretty small piece of it. It's an important one, but it's not necessarily as important as Andy and I knowing our neighbors and caring for our neighborhood, and then incrementally seeing us ourselves sort of moving out from a smaller space to a larger space so that we might, you know, travel to some part of the city and say, oh my gosh, you know, what's going on with this area here? We need to find out more about this, you know, and then see if there's something that we can't do in terms of drawing attention to its particular need. I mean, we had this something real, really close to us in our neighborhood that a bunch of our fellow citizens, you know, we got together to help with an issue that we had with recycling. And, you know, it took a lot. It took a lot of time and attention to deal with it and to deal with some problems that we had in the neighborhood around that and around people leaving trash outside that was blowing around all over the place. And we had to get some fences built. And I mean, it does take a lot of energy to plug yourself into the city's needs, but they're not neutral. And I think you will know, having read that chapter, that this whole concept of non-neutrality is super important to me. And that I really believe that, you know, when you get billions of people moving towards good, that really changes the world. Mm-hmm. And we should not be shy or think that, again, in those metric terms that, oh, we say, oh, but it's just a little thing. Does it really matter? It's like, well, think about 2 billion people doing that little thing. That really, really matters. So yeah, I love the idea of turning people on to like, hey, you're a city maker. You're a city builder. You know, what kind of city do you want to live in?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yes.
I love that. I would love to hear from you guys personally of all these letters. Which one is each one of yours favorite letter?
Do you have a favorite?
I think I have favorites of my own. Yeah. I love the chapter on cooking. Well, if you cook at all, you most likely have a cooking story, some way that you have been formed. So cooking has been such a part of my vocation. Just like to feed people has been a thread of vocation for me, really all the way through. But also in that story, there is my mom's story. There is story of trauma. There is story of coming to faith. Like there's a lot of story inside that one chapter on trying to talk about food and why it matters and how you can serve people through food, and especially if that is your calling and your gifting. And then I do also really love the one called Why No Part Is Too Small to Matter.
Which is really the thesis.
Yeah. And in that one, the little subtitle is To Those Who Need Reminding of the Greatness of Small Things. And I think who of us does not need reminding of the greatness of small things? And and that one begins with my journal writing practice, which is something that I've continued for, I don't know, more than 40 years now. And that is more than anything, that practice of sitting with an open page once a week and looking back to the week before and kind of tracing the details has shown me year after year after year that this is the way that God is creating your life. It's in the small details, the small things that you can't really see in the moment, but everybody is living them all the time. But you begin to see a larger picture when you can look back like that.
And that's so much more the reality of what it means to follow Jesus. You know, no one ever puts on their bio, you know, failed piano player.
Are you going to add that? You're not adding that, are you?
Fired for not learning the charts or something like that, right? You know, everybody's always putting your best foot forward, you know, all your achievements. And I think what Andy is saying is, in terms of looking at the whole narrative, it's not that we discount those things, they aren't part of the story, but they take their place along with equally important things, like the person who interrupted me while I was doing a work that I thought was so important and needed to get done. And then I found out that no, I really needed to be interrupted. It was more important to have that conversation. And that was also the day that the robin was trying to build a nest on the fan on the porch. And I kept trying to tell the robin, no, this is not where you build a fan, and turning the fan on to discourage the robin. And then it was also the day that we found out that our grandson got into this art college, right? So it could be all of these things that are on the page for that one day, right? And then now you see them as they are real. They're all working together as a whole, and they're not these disconnected bits that you sort of have the world editing everything going, yeah, but you know, but what else you got? You know, what else you got? Yeah. You know, it's like, no, this is what I got. Mm-hmm. This is the life. This is my life of following Christ daily. This is it. It has a dailiness to it that has a glory to it and a shame to it. And I don't need to make these huge distinguishing moves between, you know, what the world is going to celebrate and applaud and what I see as like, wow, no one knows this story, but this is like the single most significant story to me today. Yeah. And I think that's a beauty in what Andy has done for us as a family in over 40 years in keeping these journals, is because we have our story.
So good. Well, you talk about story, you talk about bios. Obviously, we live here in Nashville, and everybody's either got a bio or trying to build a bio. You know?
Yeah.
They're not trying to build a short one that you talked about. They want a really big one. And so one of the ideas you guys talk about in the book is this idea of fruitfulness versus success. Mm-hmm. Will you take a second and unpack what that looks like for you, how you live that out, how you've embraced that mindset, and help those listening here who maybe are in that battle between fruitfulness and success? How could they navigate that?
I'll start, and I'm going to quickly pivot to Andy. We have been together in the music business since we were teenagers. So we know what it's like to live with the pressure of having your life defined by the world's understanding of success. And it is always metrics. fortunately for me, I did come up in a time in music where it was still art centric. So we didn't lead with metrics, you know, when I was first starting, which is such a blessing, you know, so there was no one asking me what my Instagram followers was. Right. I mean, they might be interested in knowing, you know, how many people pay for a ticket to come see me at a club in downtown Sacramento. But it was not going to override whether somebody loved the music or not. If they love the music and they had a gut feeling about you, then you might have a shot at doing what you your dream was. So I just wanted to begin with saying that, like, we have lived in this tension between the world's understanding of success. And believe me, I have been challenged by it at every turn because I've wanted to be, in a sense, successful by the world's standards of success in order to provide for my family and in order to have the freedom to make the kinds of musical choices that I wanted to make, which to me were choices that were deeply connected to fruitfulness. And so now I'm going to pivot to you to share about that and why that's at the heart of what we believe.
Yeah. So I'll say just for me, like, I can give you some specifics. If we have a dinner with our grown children, our in-law children, our grandchildren who range from 13 to 20, and we sit around the table together and we talk and we laugh and we enjoy good food, I consider that a success and a fruitfulness that is being passed down in terms of, this is one thing that we can give to our family, a sense of belonging, a sense of having experiences that add one to another over years of loving and being loved. Well, fruitfulness as a writer, I think it's living gifts that God has given me and feeling really grateful that I've been able to write anything at all and that I've ever in the whole, you know, some of the years up to this point have people who've read it and enjoyed it and given me some kind of feedback towards that. That feels fruitful. It's not successful in terms of being a New York Times bestseller person, but in terms of longevity and all the things that God has given that I didn't have any idea when I was a young person that I would be given to do. Even just these two categories of family making or writing and just returning to these things over and over again out of a sense of, I have to do these things because this is who I am. This is how I'm made. These are the ideas that are in my head. These are the experiences that I want to write about. I've just never felt a real connection to the word success because it usually is about counting somehow, whether it's counting the amount of money that you make or the numbers of your sales or the numbers of your social media followers, just any of that sort of thing. But fruitfulness is always something that God is doing with the life that He's giving you. And so I feel like there's a trust in just the dailiness of following those things. And I felt that in our days at the art house, like, it's very fruitful to be with people and to spend time in conversation and to feed them and to grow a beautiful garden so that, you know, when people came, they would be gifted with beauty. And like, all those things were important. And then I could see the fruitfulness, and yet I didn't have to tally it up or add it up or advertise it or, you know, any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And leaning into fruitfulness can be a much more freeing posture to take too, because it puts the onus where it should be on God to determine whether something is borne fruit or your community. Right. God uses your community to speak back to you and say, hey, I saw you. I heard that. I felt that. I was there. Thank you. And then you know that, okay, it's bearing fruit and keeping with the spiritual fruit that we desire for our lives.
Yeah. And that does keep you going. Mm-hmm. That keeps you going. Okay. This is another reason to get up and this is meaningful. And go ahead. And
if you are resourced and provided for the work that you've been called to, then it's sort of like, what more do you want? I mean, because after that, then you start thinking about, you know, oh, well, I need more profit, you know, because I want to expand or I want to make, you know, things bigger, or since we are doing so well and people like what we're doing, you know, shouldn't we double down on it and do it twice as much? And again, it's not to say that you shouldn't, you know, perhaps maybe you guys should, you know, it's not for us at this time of life, but it may be for other people. But I just think that we all have to be so careful about those impulses, because while they could certainly be God leading us, they can also just be an imitation of branding and marketing that we see in the world.
Oh, man, it's so good. I really, really do appreciate you guys sharing that perspective. I love that concept. I'm going to be chewing on that for a while. Well, one of the things we love to do before we close out any episodes, first, just want to say thank you, but we like to ask three wild questions. No, okay, they're not wild. But it goes a little like this. It's what's a book that's changed your life? What's a habit that's changed your life? And what advice would you give to the younger you? So Let's start with the first one. And you got a lot of books over your shoulder right there, and I'm sure there's more somewhere else.
But, all over the house, yeah.
Yeah. If you had to pinpoint down for each one of you individually, which book would you say changed your life?
I'll start because there's a book that I refer to often, and it's Wendell Berry's Hannah Coulter. It's a novel. Yay. A reading friend.
That's one of my favorite books of all time.
She comes in all the time telling me, listen to this.
It's so good.
Yeah. So good.
What about it changed you?
Oh boy. You know, it's been a while since I've read it, but I think the story of this older woman, Hannah, who's looking back on her life, and she is seeing the struggles and the hardships and the fruitfulness and the place of community and people, and kind of Wendell Berry writes so often about the membership, you know, meaning the people, and also the care of a place. I remember at the time, you know, one of the things she talked about was to love a place and use it well. And I took that and thought about the place that we were in at the time and thought, that's really it. It's to love a place and use it well and to ask God's blessing. Yeah, so that's kind of what I remember. I just, you know, at this point, I've read a lot of books and it's kind of hard to keep track of what the favorite ones are, but that one always is a standout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Charlie, how about you? What's a favorite book for you?
Yeah, I would say post-conversion and early on, the most important book that I read was a small InterVarsity pamphlet called Art and the Bible by Francis Schaeffer. And that was so important because at the time when we were young Christians, it was at the sort of the back end of the eschatology that was so popular in the American church about that Jesus was coming back any minute or the rapture was going to occur any minute. And so there was a lot of thought that most of life was really not that important. You know, you did what you had to do to get by, but you were really about, you know, daily evangelism and making sure your neighbor was saved and going to college. That might not be the best thing to do, you know, when there's so many people who need Christ. So it was more kind of an environment like that. And At one point, I was even convinced that, you know, I needed to quit doing music and go to Bible college and become a pastor. And I was so fortunate to come across this pamphlet because it was exactly what I needed. This was an intellectual who was deeply committed to Christ. I mean, that was so obvious, but was the only person I'd ever heard write and talk about when God called Bezalel to create the temple, he was looking for a person of skill and ability filled with the Spirit of God. And that concept to me just set me free because it did two things. It said, one, I am responsible for the skill and ability piece. And I'm not only responsible to it, but I'm even more so responsible because I have had this musical thing since I was a little boy, right? So it's a gift and I should steward that gift. So those two together, it's the gifting that then takes the skill and ability, gives it meaning and purpose, and then causes you to grow it for the right reasons. You're no longer growing it for ego, but you're growing it for love and in service of your community. And so there's a lot I could say about that little book, but that thing in particular just really resonated with me and set the stage for the rest of my life.
So cool. You know, you write something, you put it out there, you just never know. And then your life has changed through work like
that.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
And for anyone listening who's younger, go Google the word pamphlet.
Yeah.
Right? Right? I mean, we know what it is, but yeah. What's a pamphlet? This sounds
great. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Anything 60 pages and less.
Yep. Your pamphlet, baby.
That's right. Oh, that's funny.
Okay, second question, guys. What's a habit that's changed your life?
Okay, well, I have three essentials that I would say. Writing in journals has changed my life for so many reasons, but it is the essential thing, along with being a reader of good literature, that taught me how to write and also has helped me to see the story of our life and my life and the people around me and the story of my times that I'm living in and all those things. And then staying in the Bible since I've been a Christian has been life-changing. And praying through the Psalms is something that I learned from Eugene Peterson, which is just to just pray a psalm each day and just move through the Psalms in that way. And so, yeah, praying through the Psalms, praying through the Bible, reading the Bible is just like really an interested reader and person who's coming for life and breath and food and understanding and all of that. And then sitting once a week on Saturdays and writing about the week that just passed.
Mm. Those are beautiful. I love that.
Yeah, mine is similar. I start every day with the word and I start every day with prayer. I don't use the words quiet time and Bible study per se, although of course, you know, I have quiet time and I have Bible study. But the reason why I don't use them is because I recognize that each day has the trouble of its own, right? And you no matter, you wake up and you just don't know what that day is going to be. But the one practice that I just stay completely locked in with is I literally don't do anything until I have read some of the Word of God and prayed. And in particular, I mean, sometimes I'll just say the Lord's Prayer, if that's it. As long as I haven't started my day without coming to God before, because to me, that's an act of saying, it's an act of recognizing I'm not on my own, and that I am dependent, and that I really am coming with open hearted, open hands to say, whatever you bring on this day, Lord, thy will be done. And I think it's just super important to start the day that way. And then secondly, one of my main practices is to say I'm wrong when I'm wrong and to make amends. I just think it's super important to be to admit you're wrong about stuff and like just say it. I mean, what's it going to cost you really? You'll be so much better off if you just say, yeah, I'm sorry. I did that. I was wrong. And so that's a practice. And then the same thing that goes with that, a practice of making amends, of just actually saying that to people and saying, hey, I'm sorry. I did that. We both try to practice that with each other. In recovery programs, they call it keeping short accounts. And that's what we like to do.
Good. Well, Jenny, I'm sorry. Following your lead, brother. I love it.
Yeah.
All right. The third thing is you're sitting across the table from the younger you. What advice would you give yourself?
I would say keep the long view and know that you will experience in your lifetime so much healing and redemption and beauty and joy. Hardship, yes, but also so much meaning and purpose, relationships, people to love and to be loved by. And that is just a beautiful vision for life. Just like have that out in front of you and know that God is going to take you on that beautiful journey. I wish we had a better word for journey, but that's the one we have. So, yeah.
I would say to my younger self, hey, man, there's going to be a whole bunch of stuff that you're going to think are super important. And you're going to think that if you don't do that, or if you don't get this thing, or if you don't meet this person, or if this thing doesn't happen, then it's going to be the end of the world. It's not. And you're going to have a really hard time discerning that in the moment. But I'm telling you now, so just watch for it.
That's a good word.
Love it.
I love that. Well, thank you guys again so much for being here with us today. We could just sit and talk with you forever. But thank you for this beautiful work, for the work that you're doing in our city and globally. It's so valuable and it's so helpful. So we're so grateful. Where can people find you, follow you, get the book, all those things?
The book is available everywhere. Books are sold. And you know, but just wherever you are, locally or Amazon, whatever, it's everywhere.
Yeah. At charliepeacock.com, we have on the front page of the website, there's a bunch of logos that you can click on. It will take you to different e-tailers and books that you can order. And then we both write on Substack, so you can find us there. Those are the best ways to stay in touch with what we're doing. You know, whenever we have our next big amazing project comes out, you'll be alerted. We'll send you a pamphlet.
There you go.
We can't wait.
Well, guys, thank you so much for hanging out with us today here on a rainy Tuesday, rainy Thursday in Nashville. We really appreciate it, and we're excited for this project, and I hope everybody goes and picks it up. So thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much for inviting us.
I hope to see you in person.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Hey, thank you so much for listening today. We truly hope that this episode blessed you, and we would love to hear from you. Please take a minute and leave a review on iTunes. Hit us up on our website, therhythmofus.com, or you can even find us on social media. We love hearing from you and even your feedback on the opening song on our podcast.
Yeah, if you liked the music you heard today, you can check out this song called As For Me from her record, This Is The Hour, as well as her latest album, You Revive Me, at christyknuckles.com or anywhere you like to get your music.
Also, you can find all the information for today's episode, all the books and the links mentioned in our show notes over at our website, therhythmofus.com. That's a wrap for today's episode. We will catch you next time on The Rhythm of Us.